Yes. So he's asking a question about the definition I gave about the autocorrelation function. I don't have that particular transparency with me, but so one of the assumptions that we, so he's asking that when you see the definition of the autocorrelation function, the second part of the slide said that you are, can estimate, you know, you estimate the autocorrelation function assuming the data are stationary. And I didn't give you the definition. Well, we say that the data are stationary where the mean and the variance doesn't vary with time. So most of the time, what we do is basically you have that, actually, let me correct. The variance doesn't vary with time because we allow the mean to vary with time. And that's the reason why when you estimate the autocorrelation function, we estimate the autocorrelation function on the residuals after we having removed the effect on time. And that is the reason. So first you calculate the residuals, adjusting for time. And then you estimate the autocorrelation function on the residuals, and you are assuming that the variance of the residuals is constant over time. But if you, for example, like if you take the CD4, well, the CD4 was like trick example, but let's assume, for example, that the data set we're looking today, which is the simple one with the weight of the pigs. So, and you want to estimate the autocorrelation function for that data set. What you're going to do, you're going to estimate the autocorrelation function on the residuals after you have adjusted for time. And then what you can do, and I'll show you in the data set, you can actually estimate the variance of the measurement, sorry, the variance of the residuals at each time point. And we are making the assumption that this variance is always the same. If you remove the effect of time, you have the residuals, and you calculate the variance of the residual at each time point, and the variance increase and the variance decrease, it means that the process is not stationary. And so the interpretation of the autocorrelation function is questionable. Okay? So, but I'll, yeah, you made a good point. And on the weight of pegs data sets, I'll make clear what type of diagnostic you can do to see if the data are stationary or not. Unfortunately, if they are not stationary in this class, I'm not going to tell you, you know, how you're going to tackle that problem, but it's important to know if we're making an assumption that it's not validated. Yeah, that's a good point. Is there any other question? Do you have a question? Yes, you have a question. No? No? Is everything crystal clear in your mind? I kind of hard to believe. But all right, well, very glad. And, you know, questions, I mean, seriously, please feel free to ask questions because it's, sometime, like the question has been raised, the reason why something wasn't clear because I haven't defined it. So it's often my responsibility. So there is no problem whatsoever. So you're supposed to finish your homework today, and the solution will be posted probably sometime this afternoon or by tomorrow. If anyone wants to give me the homework, just drop it on the desk or come at desk. You know. I tend to call office hour, happy hour, which it's not very appropriate, but I have office hour, so you can also come at that time and bring it. So we on Wednesday we had this lecture which was mostly about notation, and I'm gonna go that, you know, just to review it very very quickly because I want to make sure we don't lose the focus of what we are doing. So a big part of this course is to develop linear regression model, we call general linear model for longitudinal data, so that we take into account of the correlation of the repeated measurements. And what we are doing now is that we are building explicit parametric models of the covariance metrics, and we saw one example, which is the uniform correlation model. So Examples of general linear model for correlated data is the uniform correlation model, which we will describe in more detail today, the GROW model, and the exponential correlation model. And the reason why this doesn't have a bullet, because one sample, what I'll show you is the one sample repeatedly measured SANOVA is equivalent to the uniform correlation model. And so these one are actually two models, the same thing, and these are also the same. And so this will be the topic of the lecture today and probably Wednesday. Now, we went through some painful notation, it is important that you understand what is this notation, otherwise it will be hard to follow the rest of the course. So very quickly, we have a yi is the vector of the n measurement for subject I. So this is a vector, and this is I called xi a design matrix, which are basically the metrics that contain all the covariates. And the dimension, so by dim of xi, basically I'm telling you how big is this matrix. And the matrix will have ni rows, so for one for each of the repeated measurements, and p columns, independent of how many covariates you have. So by using this notation, we can say that the vector yi, so a particular subject, the vector of measurements for a particular subject, yi, is equal to the design matrix times the vector of regression coefficient plus an error. This is, it's going to be a vector, because this is a vector, so this is a residual vector. And we assume the epsilon I as a multivariate normal distribution with the mean zero. This is a vector of all zero, and this is the covariance matrix. The dimension of the covariance matrix is going to be ni times ni. Now, what is a multivariate normal distribution? Many of you have probably haven't seen the multivariate normal distribution before, and I'll show it to you. But basically, it's a multivariate extension of the normal distribution. And we define that when you have, you always see as you always model a single random variable as a normal distribution. Now, what we have to do, we have to model a vector of measurements, because that's the repeated measurements for each subject, as a multivariate normal distribution. Vi is the covariance matrix of yi, means that on the main diagonal we have the variance for each of the for the variance of the measurements at each time, and off the diagonal are all the covariance for each pair of measurements. And this is for a particular subject I, and we assume that the subjects are independent. So basically, you can write the model by saying that this is a multivariate normal distribution for every I that goes from 1 to m, which is the number of subjects. Now, what we do, we write this model in a more compact form for all the subjects by basically taking the findings. So these are really the two things we want to keep in mind. Capital Y is basically the vector of all the measurements for everyone, okay? So the length of this vector Y is the sum of Ni for each subject, and basically this vector is defined as the vector of the measurements for the first subject, and then the vector of the measurements for the second subject, and the vector of the measurements for the third subject, and so on. So I am piling up the vector of the measurements for each subject, one on top of each other, okay? And the similar, I do the same thing for the design matrix. The design matrix for the first subject, the design matrix for the second subject, the design matrix for the M subject. And now, one thing that, an important assumption that we make is that, so this is going to be the covariance matrix for the entire, for the long, long, long vector y. So the dimension is a capital N times capital N. And on the main diagonal, we will have the covariance matrices for each subject. So variance y1, So this one is the covariance matrix for the vector of repeated measurement for subject one. And this is the covariance matrix for the vector of repeated measurement for subject M. Okay? And off the diagonal are the covariances between the two vectors of repeated measurements of two different subjects. And so the fundamental assumption that we make, there are two assumptions, very important assumptions we made. One is that V is a block diagonal. What does it mean? It means that the two, so you have the two vectors of repeated measurements. One is the vector of repeated measurements for Joe, and the vector of repeated measurement for Elizabeth. These two vectors of measurement are incorrelated. So the covariance of the two vectors, which are all the elements outside of the diagonal, it's all zero. Okay? On the main diagonal, we have the covariance matrices of the vector of repeated measurement for each subject. So this is the covariance matrix of the vector of repeated measurements for Joe, the covariance matrix of the vector of repeated measurements for Elizabeth. So these are covariance matrices which will not be diagonal because that's the purpose of the class. We want to allow that the repeated measurements for Joe are correlated and the repeated measurements for Elizabeth are correlated. Okay? But the correlation between visit 1 for Joe and visit 5 for Elizabeth is zero, and that's why we have all these zero. So that's assumption number one. Okay? The correlation between the two vectors of repeated measurements is zero. The correlation of the repeated measurements for one subject, it's not zero. And then the second one, we assume, and we can do this when everyone is measured the same number of times. Okay, so if they did a balance, everyone is measured the same number of times, then we assume that all of these covariance matrices will be equal to each other and all equal to this covariance matrix V0. Okay? So this is, yes, sure. So let's assume that we have only two subjects. Let's assume that M is equal to 2, okay? And we have only two patients enrolled in the study. So this ideal name, Joe and Elizabeth. And both Joe and Elizabeth get 3 visits, okay? And so Joe is visit 1, and we measure his blood pressure. Then we measure his blood pressure the second time, and we measure the blood pressure the third time. And so V1 is the covariance matrix of the vector of these 3 repeated measurements. The off-diagonal element of the V1 is the correlation between the covariance between measure 1 and measure 2, and you have the covariance between measure 1 and measure 3. Well, by saying that V1 is equal to V2, I'm saying that the correlation between the measurements of visit 1 and visit 2 for Joe is identical to the correlation of the measurements between visit 1 and visit 2 of Elizabeth. Okay? So the correlation between the pairs of the measurements is the same for all subjects. Okay? In fact, what we're going to do is we're going to assume it, for example, if you say that V0 has a uniform correlation structure, it means that the correlation between each pair, the correlation between VC1 and VC2, and the correlation between VC1 and VC3 is always rho, we estimate the same rho for everyone. We are not estimating a different rho for a different person. Okay? So that's why, and we can do that when Ni is equal n, when everyone is measured the same number of times. We will see later on that when different people are measured different number of times, then we can make this assumption anymore. We have to do something a little bit more complex. Yes.
If there are missing values, but they are less than, let's say, 0.5%, would you still consider it as measure of different time?
I will impute it first. I will do an imputation first, and then I will do this. Especially if there are, small percentage of scattered. Okay? Is it clear? Is there any question? So what we're going to do now, we're going to assume that V0 is a uniform, or V0 has an exponential correlation structure, and see what happens. Okay? So I am now changing, skipping a few things, so that's where I'm going. So now I am taking the situation where, again, this is our friend, Y, big Y, Y1, Ym. I'm assuming that everyone has measured the same number of times, so the total length of Y is capital N, and X is our design matrix. And so that's what I just showed you, the V, I call it the block diagonal matrix, with the known zero n by n block V0, each representing the variance matrix for the vector of measurements of a single subject. Okay? So translated, kind of translated in words, the big matrices I was showing you before. And so we have this big model. We assume that our big vector Y, long vector Y, has a multivariate normal distribution with mean x beta, and the big covariance matrix today, okay? Where our V, just to make sure, we are always, so our V is an N times N, and we assume that as V0, outside is always zero, and this is gonna be N by N, where V0 is the covariance matrix of yi for I equal 1 to n, right? Okay? And what we're going to do is now we're going to assume a model for V0. And we call it the uniform correlation model and the exponential correlation model, which are two ways of modeling the covariance matrix for the vector of measurement on a single subject. Okay. So you see, the challenge of LDA is that until up this course, you always focus your attention on this part of the model. Which covariance you want to include? Do you want to include interaction? Should we have random effects and so on? So there is a lot of effort on modeling this, and these are always be considered the residuals, all the variance that is due to measurement errors, all the parts of all the variability in the data that we cannot explain by X. And this has been the way we have been taught in linear regression model, right? So you want to model this model these components in a way that, well, it really depends on the scientific question, often to estimate some particular regression coefficients, and you want to have other covariates. So you can explain as much of the variability in Y, and so that the residual variance is small, right? Now, we are adding another level of complexity, because it's true, you still want to do that. You still want to model X to estimate the treatment effect, to estimate the trend, to estimate whatever your interest. But now, we have these repeated measurements. So after you have included all the X that you care of, you still have a residual vector for measurement that could be correlated. And so now we have to model, we have to worry about the modeling the correlation also. And that's where we have to pick this or something else. Okay? So think about two steps. The first step is something you have been familiar. You specify your design matrix, so you specify your regression model. Okay? So then you estimate your residuals, then you estimate your autocorrelation function, and that is going to guide you how you model V0. Okay? And then after you have known how you model V0, we have to find a more fancy way of estimating both, because now we have to estimate not only beta, but we also have to estimate the parameter of this depth. Okay? Oh. Okay, so the uniform correlation model. Well, we saw this briefly at the end of the class. So one way of modeling V0 is assume that, and that is the simplest way, it's basically assuming a common variance on the main diagonal and assuming that the covariance for each pair of measurements is always rho times sigma squared. Or the correlation for every pair of measurements is always rho. So you see, rho does not depend on the time difference. It's always rho. It doesn't matter if you calculate the correlation between measure 1 and measure 2 or the correlation between measure 1 and measure 5. It's always rho. Okay? And also rho doesn't depend on I. Also doesn't depend on the subject. So it's really the most simplest way as possible you could think about this model. So you see, when you then when you're going to fit this model, when you are going to estimate this model, you're going to estimate beta, you're going to estimate you have to estimate sigma squared, exactly as you were doing in linear regression, plus now you're going to estimate rho. Okay, and that will tell you what is the correlation between the repeated measurements, which is the same for everyone. So this is really the simplest way of modeling V0. And so the nicest thing about this model, and that's what I want to make sure that we cover today, is that this model actually is equivalent to another class of model, which we call the model with random intercept. Okay? And I'm going to show you the correspondence and give you also the intuition, which is a model that many of you probably has fitted before. So let's take a data set, which is the weight of pigs. So we have 48 pigs in 9 successive weeks of follow-up. So this was one of the data sets we discussed at the beginning of the course, which is also on the website. The response is measured n different times or under n different conditions. And so we have that, well, you can actually ignore this within its factor for a moment. And for basically, we have all the 48 pegs are measured 6 times. Okay, so these are 48 pegs measured 6 times. Now, you see, I'm taking these as a very simple example in terms of not using any treatment variable. I mean, you could think this example as the case of the ozone, where you take 48 pegs, you allocate 24 to a particular diet, another 24 to another diet, and then estimate the treatment effect, taking into account the correlation. Now, just because I want to focus on the correlation for now, I'm just considering a single treatment factor. And you will see later on that it's straightforward to extend it in a way that you want to estimate a treatment effect. So just take the simplest case of possible where you have 48 pegs, where we measure the weight. So this is the data set. So these are 48 pegs, and we measure. So they did are equally spaced because everyone is measured the same number of time and at the same time. And you remember that when we showed this data set at the beginning of the course, we were asking, you know, we were looking at the fact that everyone was, you know, increasing weight, that there was this tracking phenomena that the largest weight at the largest peak at the beginning was also the largest peak at the end, and that the variance of the measurements increased with time. So now going back to your question about stationarity, okay? Well, if you take, so you have this measurement, and you can take the variance of the measurement at each time point. And you will see that the variance will actually, increase with time. So my data, YT, are not stationary. But what we do here is we include time as a covariate because we want to estimate how Y changes with time. And so now, if you take this data set, you fit a linear regression, you take the residuals, and you calculate the variance of the residual at each time point, that will be constant, I mean, approximately constant. And so that's the assumption we make. We make that after you have adjusted for covariates, including time, or any other time-varying covariates, is the variance of the residual constant with time? If the answer is yes, estimating the autocorrelation function is perfectly legal. Okay. So anyway, now, so this is a data set, and the question, the scientific question that we have is, does, you know, can we estimate a rate of change? Can we estimate the average change in volume in the pig's weight from 1 week to another, right? So the bottom line is we want to see the straight linear regression with time as a covariate, okay? And so we can do that, but we have to worry about the repeated measurements, the correlation to the repeated measurements. So the simplest way to do it is to assume a uniform correlation model. So what we're assuming is that the correlation, after we adjust for time, the correlation between any pair of measurements, the correlation between the residuals at week 2 and week 3 is the same as the correlation between the residual week 2 and week 6. Okay? And so that's how we are going to deal with that. And I will show you today the little state analysis of these data sets. And I don't know if you have seen the lab today or not, but if not, you will see it. So now, when you think about these data set, you can think that there are two sources of variability. Okay, one is that the between pigs variability. So you see when you look at the data set, you have this tracking phenomenon, right? So that means that there are some genetic characteristics, some characteristics of the pig that make the pig to be always, that the poor pig is always going to be the largest. You know, the largest at the beginning is largest at the end. Okay? So not all the pigs are the same. Some pigs have some inherent characteristics of being fat, and they will always be fat, right? So there is always pig which are always being smaller. So there is a variability between pigs, okay? And that's just what we call it heterogeneity, okay? Now, then, second one, there is a variability within a pig, variability in the repeated measurement. So there is random variation in the measurement process for a particular unit at a given time. So for example, at any given day, a particular Guinea pig might have different weight measurements due to differences in scale equipment and or small fluctuation in weight during the day. So this is really the kind of error or measurement error they're used to, that you've been looking, you've been always think about when you feed a linear regression model. So, see, one way to model this data, and the reason why I'm writing this model on the bottom is because I will show you that this model I'm writing here on the bottom is identical to the uniform correlation model. Okay? So this is a model where I said that, so yij is the weight for pig I at time j. And assuming that this is equal to a mean mu of j. So assuming there is a mean which depends on time, okay? I can actually say that mu j is a linear function of time, just saying there is a different mean at each time, plus ui. Now ui is a random intercept, okay? It's something that is a typical of that peg. Okay, plus zeta ij, which is error. And then I say that the ui, which is a pig-specific effect, has a normal distribution with the mean zero and variance v square. And this is the v square is the between variance. Okay, So what I'm saying is there's going to be an overall mean which vary with time, you know, and the mean that is the average for everyone. So you're going to have an overall curve that will be the change of weight as function of time. But then what happens is each peg will deviate, but that average by this amount ui. And I'm saying that the variance of this deviation is a v squared. So if there is a large heterogeneity between pegs, basically the individual curve for each peg will deviate from the mean quite a lot. If there is a small heterogeneity between pegs, then having an overall curve will be a very good representation. And then this is the usual measurement error part, the usual variance of the measurement error that you have. Okay? So there are two. Let's go back to this. So let's assume I fit a linear regression here. Okay? So I basically say mu ij is equal to mu j plus ui plus zij, and then I say that mu j is beta 0 plus beta 1 tj. And I'll show you one step. And then I have ui is a normal 0 v squared, zij is a normal 0 tau squared. Okay? So this is the model I'm considering. And basically what I'm saying is that I model my yij as a linear function of time. Okay? So this is the same. And I just fitted that linear regression curve here. So that is the idea that how in average for everyone the weight changes with time. Now there's gonna be two sources of error. One is forget about the random effect. You will have the usual error of the linear regression model because it's going to be a deviation of the points from the straight line, right? That is the one we've been used all the time. But what I'm telling you is that there is a second source of variation, which is the random effect ui. What I'm saying is that the curve, you see, a curve for another, this is a curve for pig 1, and this is pig 1, this is pig 10. It's going to be the different peg will deviate from the average curve by this amount ui. So another way to say is that each peg will have its own intercept, but the same slope. You see, I'm assuming that actually these three curves are supposed to be parallel, but every peg will be allowed to start on a different point, which is the ui. Okay? So this is the average intercept. This is the intercept will be true for everybody on average. But actually, the pig specific intercept would be beta 0 plus ui. Okay? One other way to write the same model, just to make sure to you, you can write the same model as yij as beta 0 plus ui plus beta 1 tj plus zij. Okay? The same. I wrote the same thing. These two are identical to this. Can you see it? Right? So what is there, I'm saying that this one, this blue one is a beta 0, and the red one is a beta 0 plus u 1. Okay? So I'm assuming there is an average linear response, you know, an average response, which vary linearly with weight. But I'm assuming that each peg will have its own intercept, ui. And what we allow is that the U con I will be normally distributed with mean zero. So on average, we go back to my beta zero. And the V square is basically tell us how much variability there is between pegs. Now, we're making this model, we're making the assumption that the rate of change, beta 1, is constant for everyone. So I apologize, I draw this plot not completely right. So these three lines should be parallel, exactly parallel. Okay? We could allow also that the rate change of weight, the rate of change, the beta 1, vary from peg to peg. Okay? But for now, that's the model we are using. Okay? So, we have a data set, repeated measurements, and the model I'm showing you is called a linear regression model with a random intercept. I don't know how many of you have seen random effect models, but this is the simplest way of thinking about a random effect model or a multi-level model. Okay? So, we have repeated measurements, and we can model these repeated measurements by assuming this model, by allowing a random intercept. Allowing a random intercept, we basically model two sorts of variance, the variance between and the variance within. Okay? Is everyone clear with all this math? Okay? So now, why I'm telling you all of this? Because before I show you this covariance matrix, right, and now I jump to here, right, so what is different? Because what I want to show you, this class, that the model I've been writing here, that we will fit it together in Stata, is identical to a model which assumes a uniform correlation structure. And there is a correspondence between our row of the correlation matrix and these two variants. Okay? So, and the reason why it is so important is because when you're going to do analysis of longitudinal data and you do XTGEE correlation uniform, it has to be absolutely crystal clear that what you're also doing is fitting this type of modeling and interpret all the parameters because it's very useful. Because let's assume you know how to fit this model, and let's assume that you found out there is a very large heterogeneity between pegs, this V square is very high. Well, it means that a lot of covariance, a lot of things about these pegs that you are not including in this model. Okay? And the average curve, yes, is an average, but you know that the individual peg will deviate from that average quite substantially. And we will see the parameter interpretation. So what I did now, I show you the uniform correlation model, and I show you a model with a random intercept. And now what I hope to be able to do is to show you they're the same. Okay? So this is my model. So we call this model a marginal model, and you can write these as x beta, the usual x beta. So I just want to make sure you still, I could have read this a little better. So remember where we were here, right? And you have a model for the mean, and a model for the covariance matrix. And then you're going to focus on this V0. And I told you that we have to worry about two things, the model for the mean and the model for the covariance matrix. And that's what I have here. Here, for simplicity, I simply had the model for the mean, I just call it mu, but actually this could be our xi beta, okay? And so these could be a linear function of time, anything that we need to worry about, just as you will worry in any regression analysis. And then now the model for the covariance is a uniform correlation model. Now, don't get scared about this, okay? This is just a compact way of writing your uniform correlation model. So let me tell you what is this. So this is the identity matrix. So it's a matrix that's one on the main diagonal and zero outside. And this is a vector of one times a vector of one transpose. So this is a matrix n by n, which will have one everywhere. And, you know, biostatistics, so we try to save space. So it's basically, I just want to show you, and I can give you the example. So this is, you see, if you take, so what I did here, and I'll, you know, if you want it, I'll be happy to give you a copy and write it up. But so V0, it's so the one I have in purple is just a compact way of writing these metrics, which is the uniform correlation matrix. And now I did it, well, you take 1 minus rho for identity matrix. I just did it for when you have the dimension is 3, okay? But that's true for any dimension. So you have a 1 minus rho times the identity matrix plus rho in a matrix with all 1s. So if you multiply this by this, it's going to be a diagonal matrix with 1 minus rho plus a matrix with rho everywhere. And then you sum these two matrices. On the main diagonal, you take 1 minus rho plus rho, which is always 1. And off the diagonal is always going to be rho. Okay? This is our matrix algebra. It's so mysterious that I can take something and write it small. Okay? So actually, Beth, I give you all the hints to try to do it by yourself and see if you if you're getting some flexibility on matrix algebra. So that's all it means, right? Now, by sigma square, so I'm going to reinterpret this model under random effect model. By sigma square, we mean, so see, here we model the mean, and so sigma square is going to be what we call the total variance. So we'll incorporate both the variance between and the variance within. And then rho is the correlation between any two pairs of measurement, which is always rho. Okay. Now, well, I'll get to that later. Don't worry about this theta command. So, see now, this is how the correspondence came up. If you take a random effect model instead, so this is the same model I was showing you before, okay? So this is a model where you have a model now conditional to a pig specific intercept, u con I. So you have the yij is equal to mu con j plus the deviation u con I plus an error. And in the example for the pig, what we did, we assumed that mu j was equal to beta 0 plus beta 1 t con j. Okay? So the first equation basically said that mu ij have an overall mean, beta 0 plus beta 1 tj, but each pig has its own intercept, which is a beta 0 plus u con I. And then there is an error zeta ij. Okay? Is everyone with me? Now, the second equation, I just take the expected value. So we know the expected value of zeta is 0, and I just rewrote the whole thing as a vector, nothing else, okay? And so now we have that, see, mu con I as a normal distribution with v squared. So v squared is the variance. It's the same model I was writing on the data set. So v squared is the heterogeneity variance, is the variance between. And the zij is the measurement error variance, okay? And the sigma square is the total variance. Okay, so this is exactly the same model that I show you on the data set. And that is a model with a random intercept, okay? Well, what is true is that if you So you can have the same data set specifying the mean as a linear function of time and fit a model by allowing a uniform correlation matrix, or you can fit a model with a random intercept. Well, what happened is that the correlation rho of our uniform correlation matrix is actually equal to the variance between divided by the total variance. Okay? So the correlation within the repeated measurement, so if you assume a uniform correlation model, that correlation, which is the correlation between every pair of repeated measurements, is actually defined as how much of the total variance is explained by the between variance. It then makes sense. Why that makes sense? Because if the variance between is very large, it means that there is something about the pig, there are a lot of genetic components about the pig, that will reinforce the fact that the repeated measurements for the same pig are correlated. So remember, the pig is like it's having a cluster, okay? So if you have a lot of variability between pigs, it means that the correlation between the repeated measurements for the same pig are high. So if you have a data set and you fit a model with a random intercept, and you have even the ANOVA analysis where you estimate the variance between the variance within, you take the ratio of the variance between divided the total variance, that is the correlation rho of the uniform correlation model. Now, here is the proof, which I'm not going to go through, although, I can go through, actually. Yes, I can go through, at least for a little bit. And I really would like to see if you can try it yourself. So the first equation is actually is simply what I wrote before. This is a vector of dimension n times 1. So what I want to show you is that if I start this model in this way, which is a model with a random intercept, and I calculate the mean and the variance of the model with the random intercept, averaging with respect to the random effect, I obtain a uniform correlation model. So the first equation is basically it's simply the model for the mean, okay, conditional to the random effect. And so what I do, if you take the expected value yi, this is defined as the expected value yi given the mu I. So the random effect of mean zero. So basically that means if you take all the individual curves and you average across everyone, you're going to get back the overall curve. Well, that's okay, right? Now, but what I want to show, the interesting part is the covariance. So I want to show you that if you start with a model with a random effect, the marginal covariance matrix for y is a uniform correlation model. So what happened, that the first equation is a classical definition in statistics, that when you have, because this is a random variable as well, so we define the covariance of y as the covariance of the expected value given ui plus the expected value of the covariance given ui. So when we specify a random effect model, we specify everything conditional to the random effect, which is a random variable as well. So that is the first part. Well, so then we have to calculate the covariance. Well, the expected value yi given ui is ui plus the covariance of yi given ui is the usual tau squared, because this is just the variance, assuming that the random effects are fixed, so it's just the usual tau squared, which is the measurement error variance. Now, the covariance of yi, we know it's v squared, and so this is equal to v squared plus tau squared, and then you have to take account of this is going to be one transpose, plus the density matrices. So basically, this is the covariance matrix that you get. And if you partial out by v squared plus tau squared, you get these two quantities. And the disease is actually our rho. Okay? So try to sit next to a biostat friend or someone which is really handy with matrix algebra. I just want to show you that that's true. Okay. Yes. Yes, sigma squared in the bottle is this one. So sigma squared is the total variance, which is v squared plus tau squared. No, well, sigma squared measure, it's sigma squared multiplied these matches. So, see. Can I go back to one thing? Remember when I have these at the beginning? Okay. Well, the interpretation now is that sigma squared is equal to v squared plus tau squared, and rho is equal to v squared plus tau squared, where v squared is the variance between and tau squared is the variance within. Okay. So if you fit my model with a random effect, you have the random intercept only. I also remember, this is true only when you have continuous response and a model with a random intercept only. Okay? Continuous response, random intercept only. You estimate the variance between and the variance within, and there is a one-to-one correspondence between the two sources of variance and the tau squared, sorry, and sigma squared and rho for a uniform correlation model. So I'm just going to say the same thing over. So if rho is the correlation between any two measurements on the same subject, then V0 is the definition of the uniform correlation model. And so if I write the model, if I consider a model with a random intercept, basically we can say that the uniform correlation model can be interpreted as a linear model for the mean response with the random intercept ui, having a variance by v squared between subjects. So that's a very nice representation, a very nice representation and interpretation. Okay. I'm going to skip to the next one because it's the same thing. What I would like to do is to do a little bit of state analysis just to show you that it's less hard than you think. And did you guys have analyzed these data sets in lab today? Oh, okay, so you have done already on this. Okay, that's good. So we can, this is why you're like pretty comfortable. Okay, that's great. So what we can do it, we can actually she show you the random effect commands and the uniform. Great, excellent. Okay, so should I skip all of these or should we look together? Okay. Okay, so this is the data set, right? And I mean, it's very important that you always try to integrate the theory with the theta command, because that's how you see it. So I'm going to show you the estimate. So this is nice. So what this shows. Is basically the estimate of the autocorrelation function of the residuals after you have regressed the measurement with respect to time. Okay? So on top you have autocor, week, time, ID, and that is the estimate of the autocorrelation function, and that's the plot. And then that is our, you know, scatter plot matrix. And so you see that. See, it's actually the correlation is actually pretty high. Because even a lagged 5, you know, it's 0.56. Actually, lag 8 here. So, assuming a uniform correlation structure, it's kind of a stretch here, okay? Because it's not really flat, it's actually decay. So they, I think, would be more appropriate to use an exponential correlation structure. But for now, let's say that we use a uniform correlation structure. So basically, this is the model you're looking at. So you have yj will be equal to beta 0 plus beta 1 tj plus zij. And now by doing ordinally square, ignoring correlation, basically what you are doing, you're assuming that the correlation between zij and zij prime is always 0. Another way to say is that you assume that v square, b0 is a sigma square 1, 0, 0. Okay? So the model 1, what it's doing, we are feeding a linear regression model, beta 0 plus beta 1 tj. So we feed this linear trend common to everyone, and we assume that everything is less than my zij are uncorrelated. So that means that the V0 that we are using here as sigma square, I'm sorry, actually let me keep the notation, I'm sorry, the tau square, we call it tau square here. It doesn't really matter, but the important thing is that the off-diagonal element of V0 is always 0 because we are not allowing for any correlation, okay? So we see ordinally square, and we estimate that the estimates for the coefficient, the beta 1 estimates for time is 6.2, and the standard error is 0.81. And so there is a very strong linear effect with time. You know, the t-statistic is 75. But we know that this is wrong because there is a very strong correlation between the repeated measurements that we are ignoring. Here, by feeding this model, another way to say it, we're assuming that the autocorrelation is center of zero and it's flat. And the previous plot, it doesn't really agree with that. Now, the one that you have on the bottom, which we call independent correlation model, is identical to the first. It uses a fancier command because it's XTGE, and many of you get very excited when you use it, but the correlation is independent. That means that that's the correlation structure you're using. So the first and the second will give you exactly the same thing. So they are independent. So basically what you are doing, you're feeding ordinally square. And I will show you mathematically why they are the same. Okay, when I'm going to tell you where these numbers are coming from. Okay. Now, one thing is, you see, there is a difference when you take a statistic class between being able to using a software and be able to write the form of the model next to any software command you use and have an idea of where the numbers that the software gives you are coming from. And these are two very different levels of understanding statistics and doing statistical analysis. So if you type a command in Stata and you don't have in your mind what is the definition of the model that you have on top, don't do it. Because you have no idea what you're doing, okay? And that's why we're suffering here together for 2 months, okay? Otherwise, I can just give you 15 commands of Stata, you can do it yourself, right? So it's very important, and that's why I wrote it down on top. You have to integrate these commands with the mathematical definition of the model, okay? So this is, these are the same. So now what we do is, see if I have, oh, okay. So then, I'm gonna show you how you feed the random effect model. Okay? So now you could feed, so by doing XT reg weak time, RA means random effect. Okay? So what you're doing with this 0.5, you're feeding the model above that we've been discussing together through all, you know, all this morning. So which you have, so it's going to be, so it's time, so it's going to be that you're going to have an average curve, beta 0 plus beta 1 Tj, the average response curve, the average relationship between weight and time. And then you're going to allow that each peg will have its own intercept, u con I. And then you're going to have two sources of variance. I'm just using now the same notation that you have in this data. Sigma square u, which is the between variance, and sigma square e, which is the within variance. So now you're doing something more fancier than an ordinal square. Okay? And actually what you are doing by doing this, you're assuming a uniform correlation model. Okay? So what this cluster gives you now, you have an estimate. So 6.2 is the point estimate of beta 1. And 0.039 is the standard error of beta 1. Now you see, if you go back to ordinal squared, the estimates of the standard error were actually different. Okay? And this is much more appropriate than the other one. This is not right yet because it's a uniform correlation model. But it's still better than the previous one where you just say the correlation was zero. Now, 19.35 is the average intercept. It's the point estimate of beta zero. Okay? So basically by plotting the 19.35 plus 6.20 times time, the variable time, you get this average curve. Okay? But now we know that each figure will deviate. How much it will deviate? It will deviate by an amount of 3.89. So actually this is sigma u a variance or a standard deviation? Mm-hmm. It's a standard deviation? Okay. So u con I, so each peg will have an intercept that can deviate plus or minus 2 times 3.89. Okay? Because you have each peg will have has a random intercept with the mean 0 and the standard deviation 3.89. So you can have the big peg, the farthest peg, will have an intercept which will be 19.35 plus 1.96 times 3.89. And that would be its curve. Okay? The smallest peg will have the intercept that will be 19.35 minus 1.96. 3.89, that would be the smallest peg. The average peg will have an intercept 19.35. Okay? So this is the between, this measures the heterogeneity of the pegs, which is the variance of the random effect. And this is the measurement error variance, 2.09. Okay? It's the part of the variance which is just due to the measurement error. You see the rho? 0.77, rho is 3.89, actually this is squared, 3.89 squared divided by 2.09 squared plus 3.89 squared, okay, is the ratio, and is a 0.77, and rho is the rho, the same rho of our uniform correlation structure. Basically what it's telling you is that the correlation between any pair of a repeated measurement, it's 0.7. And to make sure that what is coming out of here, it's not a totally crazy number, is that when you look at the estimated within correlation matrix, so all of these numbers, 0.7 should kind of be an overall average of everything that's going on here. So be smart. If you estimate, if you're doing your midterm and this one, and this number range is 0.1, 0.4, and the row that you get from the random effect model is 0.9, something wrong, okay? That should be, now, that should be a summary, because basically what you do by the random effect model is telling you that this estimated metric will have a 0.7 everywhere here. Okay? And the estimates of beta 0 and beta 1 will take into account the 0.7. In fact, you see, when you have a linear regression model, the point estimate of the regression coefficient will not vary much under different assumptions for the correlation. That will be very similar. What's going to change are the standard error. Now, what we're going to see is that when you do logistic regression and Poisson regression, that's not going to be true anymore. How you change the correlation structure, even the point estimate of the odds ratio will change. It can change also a lot. And also that interpretation will change. So it's going to be another business. Now, if you see, okay, so I'll show you this. Let me remember what else I have. This. Okay, you can also do maximal likelihood estimation. So this is just a command that will give you exactly the same thing as before. Now, what I was going to show you, although I haven't told you yet, is that you can also feed the same model, well, you have probably have done it, by assuming an exponential correlation structure. So, you see, I have this exponential correlation model, and so basically the command is now XTGEE weak time car air 1. Now, one thing I want you to do for me, probably have done it this morning, to do car exchangeable, which means uniform correlation structure. Okay, and you have to, you will get the same identical estimate of the model by doing random effect. The same thing, okay? Now here what I do, I assume a correlation structure which is not uniform but is exponential, which actually is the most appropriate model for this data set because our autocorrelation function is decaying, right? So by doing correlation AR1, I'm assuming that it is an exponential correlation structure. And so what happened is that the estimates now you have that the standard error is 0.079. So just compare what we had before because it's again different. And the correlation that you have a log one. So then you see by doing an exponential correlation model, basically you're assuming that the correlation matrix is rho and then rho square and then rho six. Rho at the biggest power of the log difference. And so it will give you an estimated within correlation matrix. And so by definition, it will have that. This is the correlation between the measurements of log 1, that's the correlation of log 2, that's the correlation of log 3, of log 4, and you see by definition will all decay. Will be 91, 84, 77, 70, 64, 59, and 54. Actually, one thing that you want to do, you kind of want to compare this estimated within correlation matrix with the estimated correlation function that you plotted at the beginning to see how well it fit. And so this is actually, you know, the nice model to fit. So one thing I would really like you to do is to retake everything you have done in lab this morning plus the lecture today and fit these, so analyze this data set by using ordinal least square, a model with a random intercept, and doing a marginal model with a uniform correlation structure and the marginal model with the autoregressive structure, which is the same as an exponential. For each of the four models, write down the model for the mean and the model for the covariance matrix, and write down the interpretation of the parameter you estimate. theta 0, theta 1, sigma squared, and rho. Okay? If you can do these homeworks, you're following, you know, this is a way that basically you're getting comfortable of following the material. And probably you have done it this morning. Yeah? Yes. So I'm going to write it up. No, I love the homework. It's really part. my job has been now just to do homework. So take this pig data set, okay? And always assume as a covariate you just have a time, nothing else. This data set, equal space, time as a covariate. And what I want you to do is I want you to fit, to analyze the following model. So ordinally square, just standard, basically is a standard, I call it standard linear regression model. Then I want you to do a model with random intercept. Three, I want that you have a model with uniform correlation. Four, a model with exponential correlation. Okay. Now, just I want to make sure you don't get confused. Uniform correlation theta is a core exchange, and model with exponential correlation is theta is core air one. Okay, so uniform correlation model, exchangeable correlation model is the same thing. Exponential correlation model, autoregressive model is the same thing. So what I want you to do is, for each of these 4 points, point one, so for each point, for each one, two, three, and four, I want you to do A, fit, model in theta. Two, B, okay, define the mathematical form of the model. By define the model, I mean define the expected value for the y and the variance of y. That's what I mean. Okay? And then C, write up the interpretation of the estimated coefficient. I mean beta 0 at, beta 1 at, the variances component, we call it sigma square, and rho. Okay? So take this set, fit ordinally square, and so you have your theta command, write it up with square, and basically that's what I kind of did here in here, okay? And that would be very useful to say, yeah? Sure. Well, the marginal model, so, yes, and that's a good point. So marginal model is the model 3 and model 4. So I call marginal model every time I do not condition with respect to any random effect. So it's just the marginal model for the mean. Okay? So here the marginal model are the model 3 and model 4. So you see, if you think about the uniform correlation model, you can think about a marginal model for the mean with a uniform correlation structure. Or a model with random effect. And that's what we call the conditional model, because it's you model the expected value of y conditional to the random effect. Okay, so that's the semantic distinction. Okay. Are you guys clear at least with the homework? Yes, not really. Yes, okay, one and two. Yeah, we move on. Yes, you can, but that would be another model. But that's, yes, and so, in fact, if you do, let's assume you take a model with a random intercept and a random slope, okay, that will lead to another correlation structure, which is not a uniform, it's not R1, it's something more complicated, and we will see that. That's a good question, yeah. Yes, so I just want to, let me clarify the difference, okay? Yeah, so model 3, okay, so model 1, model 3, and model 4 are all marginal models because are models which basically we don't have a random effect. We only model the mean marginally. Okay, so, yeah. That's basically. I was actually, that was one thing I should, you know, what we'll do on Wednesday, there were two slides that was at the first lecture. If you look at the first lecture, at the end of the first lecture, there was a definition, was a distinction between marginal model, random effect models, and transition models that I actually skipped. So what I will do on Wednesday, I will bring that back. So then at least you're clear the difference between the two. So don't take it now, but Wednesday I will go back to that. But you can see it in the meantime when you're thinking the difference. But for this homework, every time I don't have any random effect, these are marginal models, okay? So I have a table here with all the different theta commands that you probably got it from the lab or on the website. And these will be, so, you know, a lot of these commands are actually doing the same thing. And so by as you will continue to do analysis about this course, it's important to figure out what all of these commands are doing and what is the correspondence between what I said and what this commander is doing. And that's something you should ask all the time in lab as well. When the TA is gonna type XT reg YX RE, you should ask, can you write down the model? Okay? I'm sure they'll be very happy about this suggestion I'm making. And, you know, and if you guys get confused, that's fine. She will tell me and we will do it together. But that's very important that you know what is the correspondence. They will know. They're pretty good. Now, I'm going to do one more thing and then I will leave. Let you go. I mean, what we did, I just want to make sure that someone asked me. Although this model seems very simple, it's actually, you can see that if you understand the logic, you can extend it very easily to accommodate any situation that you like. So a simpler one, I just assume that the model has a linear relationship. But now, you see, if you have a quadratic relationship or any crazy relationship, that's fine. You're just going to model the mean by allowing, you know, quadratic term or a cubic term. If you have the pig, there were 24 of the pigs were allowed to a particular diet, and other 24 were allowed to a different diet, and you want to estimate the treatment effect, you would just allow add another covariate for treatment effect, and all the rest is be equal, but now when you estimate for the treatment effect, because you have allowed for a uniform correlation model or for an exponential correlation model, the standard error of that treatment effect are correct, and so your test hypothesis is correct. So when you're doing this data analysis, don't say all the Degania pig, because now you can model your mean as flexible as you like, as much as you allow for the correlation, all the estimates of the parameter of interest of the mean will be estimated properly. Okay. So I'm actually going to quit here, and your problem must be very tired as well. So, and I'll see you Wednesday.